Hey, good morning, Peter. How are you doing?
How are you doing? Good to hear you.
Yeah, Peter, the truth is, coming off from the last, well, I want to discuss three things with you, but coming off from what the last caller spoke to you about, I want to commend Marsha Hengeland, for stepping forward boldly, Peter, to deal with this issue. And I'm not going to be distracted by the comments of the minister, but I would hope that the persons responsible for this behavior be held accountable for it. Because there's human beings that we're dealing with. You can't treat people so. That's all I would hope in that banner. But I want to thank Marsha Hengeland for her efforts and raising this serious issue to the members of the public. The next thing I want to deal with, Peter, is the whole issue of the... I listened to the Prime Minister 4 days ago, I think it was, where she saw the continuation and reopening the country. And Peter, I'm almost sure, I started to doubt myself and went back and listened to the Prime Minister again. And the Prime Minister made it abundantly clear that bars in this country will be reopened, but there will be no lingering at the bar. So in other words, if a fellow go and he buy a white rum and a taster, he's not to linger at the bar to partake in that beverage, that he must now move away. And if there's any accommodation for him on the same location as opposed to being at the bar, that is what I thought I understood the Prime Minister to be saying. But we are now having members of the COVID-19 monitoring unit team moving around, closing bars and making it clear that they are not included in the reopening phase that the Prime Minister spoke about 4 days ago. And that's not what I'm hearing from the Prime Minister say, right? So somebody somewhere probably misunderstood what the Prime Minister said. Because I heard the Prime Minister also spoke about no in-house dining for fast food restaurants, but she permitted in-house dining for restaurants. I believe that the COVID-19 team, Mountain Unit team, and I'm bashing them, but appraise yourself with what has happened and what the Prime Minister is saying, rather than high-handedly going up there and doing things contrary to what is being said by the persons such as the Prime Minister and the Attorney General. So, somebody must come and set the record here, because I think I understood the Prime Minister. I listened to her again, and I think that is what I understood her to be saying. But yet we still have persons. Two of these people had to close down since the 3rd of February, and they had no income. So if a fella come now, Peter, you open two doors, and George, he can come to buy a white one from you, and shut it down. I mean, Peter, if people can follow the protocol, they can buy a car, give people a chance. It can't be so high-handed and believe that. I understand the severity and the challenges that we are having in relation to COVID-19. And at this time, I would thank all the members of the Ministry of Health who fought hard to get the numbers down. But at the same time, Peter, we got to be conscionable, man. We can't be treating the people like they're cattle in this country. We got to give people a chance. I mean, you have a bit of from you understand not to have an income from February 3rd to the 20th, and then and then as you open the door, it's somebody can come to I mean, appraise yourself of what's happening and exercise some discretion accordingly. The next thing I want to speak to Peter is, I don't know what's your views on the ID card. Obviously, the electronic that you would carry valuable and personal and sensitive information for the members of the public who would be coming forward to receive these cards in their name. Now, the challenge I'm having is that I am hoping that the government will use this opportunity before they launch this, introduce this, that they will have some meaningful conversation with the members of the public in relation to how the personal information will be managed. You remember, Peter, we had the immigration biometric regulations 2015 that the Democrat Labour Party piloted in the floor of Parliament, and there was a lot of song and dance about it, and people were concerned about fingerprinting nationals when they return home from abroad. You remember that discussion, right?
I remember it well, yeah.
Right, and that there were some concerns as to how the process would be managed in relation to people's personal information. I believe that if we're going to go this route, I have no difficulty in going this route, but at the same time, Peter, you got to understand, because you did A-level law and that you would know or you'd be acquainted with the third-party doctrine that holds that if a person voluntarily gives information to third parties such as banks and credit unions and financial institutions and so on, that they have no reasonable expectation of privacy. So if we can become open to personal information, I believe that we need to have a national conversation on this. And as we were forward, we just had somebody who
just give me a minute to respond, because you said a lot, and I'm gonna leave the first issue behind, because I've already spoken and offered my views on that whole matter of the girl at the government industrial school. But in terms of this other issue, in terms of the thing, my question to you is, what sensitive information is it that government is requesting that they retain on the new ID card that is not part and parcel of the old ID card other than the fingerprint? And I'm going to speak to the fingerprint separately. What information is it that you're speaking to specifically that you think is new information that government will be requesting?
I'm hearing about medical records. That's why I want the government to come forward.
No, medical records. I didn't see anything about medical records on it.
I'm here. That is one I was hearing. One of the aspects of it I was also hearing was other information such as medical records was one of the things I heard.
No, but Patrick, come off it. Let's deal with what is on the document. I've seen a document circulating, and it speaks to information like your name, address, aliases, and so on. All of that is information that government already has access to within the context of our current ID card arrangement. The matter of the fingerprint is a separate conversation, and I'm helped in that regard because I was involved in the creation of the ID card schedule in St. Kitts and Nevis, which was a separate exercise, and we created a national ID card there within the context of their own thing. And what we did with the fingerprint is that we created the option to have a fingerprint in situations where people were comfortable giving it. So, because there was a lot of public outcry there as well about people saying that they were not delivering the fingerprint, And the government very quickly said, look, you know, we're not making it mandatory. If people want to, they can. And I think that's exactly what has been done in this instance, where the fingerprint, as I understand it, is entirely up to you. Now, how do you use the information in relation to the fingerprint? I, Peter Wickham, personally, I could care less whether someone has a fingerprint, because ultimately a fingerprint is how you identify me positively. And an ID card, let's face it, an ID card is about a positive ID. You show a picture in the past, and that's how you recognize someone. The ID card is a lot more certain in terms of saying that the person who has a document is the ID card. So I have no difficulty with it. If a fingerprint would mean that when I go to the airport, for example, I can enter Barbados more quickly, in that I just press my thumb or press my palm print on a machine in the way that it is done in Miami, and a gate opens and lets me into the country, I will give you my fingerprint. Because if it means that I can get through faster, I'm certainly happy to do that. If, however, a person says, I'm not comfortable giving a fingerprint and I would prefer not to, my understanding is that person has no reason to do so, and there's no requirement or compulsion for that person to give a fingerprint. Let's deal with medical records, right? Now, there's nothing on the schedule that says medical records. However, the practice currently is that when you create a microchip within the ID card, the microchip has the capacity to hold volumes and volumes and volumes of information. So in addition to your name and so on, the chip has the potential to hold, on the actual chip, it can hold encyclopedias worth of information on you. Now, one of the things that you may want to have handy is your medical records. So for example, if you are involved in a serious accident, you'll have your ID card. Someone can swipe the ID card and they will get allergies, your medical history, drugs that you might be on, and so on, and those types of information. But that is entirely your choice. Now, for me personally, again, if I had an ID card that had that capacity, I would say charge it with medical records. If you want, you can charge it with travel records. You can charge it with residency information, so that at a swipe, you can get hold of all of that critical information with me, because I do not mind. At the same time, however, if there is a person that objects, that person should not be compelled or forced to do it. But I think it is certainly forward looking for government to create a facility that says, we have this card that has the capacity to hold medical information. So if at any point in time in the future you decide you want to have your entire medical history saved to that card, you have the facility to do so. Over to
But I am not knocking the card. The part I am concerned about is the persons who will be charged with responsibility and handling this information. Now, quite recently, we had some person who we had information circulating on social media with persons who were tested positive for COVID-19. Now, this is sensitive information. Had no right to be in the public domain. Nevertheless, it was there. Now, how do you convince the average Joe Blow that we would not have a reoccurrence of this this practice should they surrender their personal information, you understand me, and things for an identification card, right, in exchange for new identification cards, because people must be comfortable that those persons who are charged with the responsibility...
But Patrick, there's no reason to argue about it, because I'm saying there are two different things, right? And this we're going to have to move on from this. There are two different things. One is a question as to whether government is forcing you to surrender information that will be badly managed, or the other one is a conversation about information management and security of information management. And I think that it is an entirely different thing. Hold on a second. It's an entirely different thing to speak of information like fingerprints and so on, which are going to be placed in a secure system within the context of what government has designed. And we can have a conversation about it. And the idea of persons testing positive for COVID, which was clearly badly handled. And I presume it was not a system that was designed to offer the level of protection that this one has. In the case of the one that I was responsible for, we identified about 14 layers of protection that was available to the individual who gave information to that system. And it was, ironically, it was a system that was designed by, it was a Dominican firm, and the hardware was provided by a Barbadian company. 14 layers of protection. And that was all back in 2007, 2006, somewhere around there. So I could imagine the level of protection that's available now. So the point I'm making, Patrick, is that there is nothing wrong with us having a conversation about securing information, especially in light of what happened with the COVID declaration. But I do not think that that conversation should be construed as a suggestion that we are opposed to the idea of making our ID card more contemporary or whatnot, or alternatively, that government is forcing anyone to provide a fingerprint. That really is the issue that came up at the airport. People were objecting to being forced to provide a fingerprint, and I agree with them entirely, because as I said, I personally don't care. But I do not believe that a person should be forced to give a fingerprint as a condition of entry into Barbados. Because if you are a Barbadian, they cannot prevent you from entering Barbados. In the United States of America, they also have a fingerprinting regime to which they do not subject their citizens. If, however, you want to use, they have a new system now that allows you to go straight to the door and the door open, you go in immediately, which is really, really fast. If you want to use that, you have to give your fingerprint. But if you are comfortable waiting in line, then you don't have to give your fingerprint as an American. I, however, because I'm not an American, I have to give my fingerprint if I'm going in. And as I said to you, I really don't care. But let's not conflate the issues. Anyhow, Patrick, we're going to have to run. We got to take another break, and then we have quite a few callers on the line. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks, 434-1790. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Peter. How are you, Steven?
Good morning, sir. How are you doing? I'm good. All the best to you.
I'm in total agreement with the closing of bars, whether it's legal or illegal. I can tell you why. Most people, when they become intoxicated, they become irresponsible. So my question is, when you drink, when you buy a drink and don't drink it at the bar, you take it somewhere else, that makes you immune to becoming intoxicated. That person can be the difference between someone living and someone dying. How do you feel about it? And you know what bothers me too? That you see a lot of ads on television, you hear them on radio and all kind of thing about the consumption of alcohol. But yet it's being promoted. I remember years ago, they keep telling you that sportsmen and women should not smoke or drink alcohol. But you had a place that manufacture alcohol beverages promoting Division One cricket. Mm-hmm. When you win a game, you get a case of rum.
But what was the basis of your hypocrisy charge? Because we're giving away rum as a prize and then telling people that they can't go to a bar during COVID? What exactly you're saying?
Listen, as I said, there's some people, I don't know if it was correct in saying most people, but there's some people that when they become intoxicated, they become irresponsible. And I believe in prevention rather than cure. I see the corner vendors who do a good trade on Sundays. They can't sell on Sundays no more. The bread vendors can't sell on Sundays no more.
Mm-hmm.
It's things that need to be looked at. I have said it. I ask you, what is this that you have against the Democratic Party? I'm talking about the past ones because
Mr. P, before we go any further, let me deal with this whole question of the directive, right? As I understand it, bars are not open. So it's not a question of closing them down. The directive states that bars are not open. Okay, so that should satisfy your concerns about people having access to drink. The challenge, I believe, that you will have... No, but that's what the directive says.
Yeah, but you said they can make the purchase, but you can't remain at the premises.
Right.
You can make
if you have a shop that sells rum, then you buy your rum and you leave. But if you have a shop that has a bar in the back where people will drink and congregate, then clearly that doesn't happen.
Peter, you missed my point. You missed my point. It shouldn't be sold even in supermarkets, the alcohol section.
No, but you can't ban rum. You crazy? You won't ban rum? You can't do that. You tried that already under the first lockdown.
What I am saying, Peter, with the situation as it is now, with this COVID thing, when a man get drunk, okay, I come at your bike by the drink.
Mr. P, you make the presumption. No, I'm stopping you because you're making the presumption that everybody who will drink a rum or two can get drunk. There's some people who will drink a glass of rum and that's how they get themselves through the day.
Hello.
They're nothing wrong with that. No, let me make it clear, Mr. P. I am not that person. I don't drink rum every day. But at the same time, if there's a person who likes to drink a glass of rum in the evenings, come, I ain't gonna quarrel with that. They got a lot of old people that drink rum every evening and live to the ripe old age. So I think that we gotta start with the judgment here. If the rule is the rule, we already had a ban on alcohol sales during the first lockdown. And I thought it was a very, very bad idea because you created a level of stress. You also created a black market for alcohol, which essentially sent the prices through the roof in a way that was unnecessary. And it was hard on my liquor stocks, you know, when my friends came over and saw. Huh?
Let me ask you something. What are the health benefits? Now, everyone, get serious, you get real serious now. What are the health benefits of consuming alcohol and smoking cigarettes? Tell me, name them.
Mr. P, that is entirely irrelevant because there are no health benefits, as far as I know. There are no health benefits associated with my drinking coffee when the days come either. There's no health benefits associated with Coke and Sprite and sweet and red juices. There are no health benefits associated with that either. So let's not get into a conversation about health benefits because ultimately what it goes to is not what is more beneficial or less beneficial. It's what you like and what you don't like. And I am not getting into the situation of judging somebody's sin. If it is that you want to drink rum and smoke cigarettes, that's your business. Once you're forcing me to do it, I don't see the problem. And I think you should have the right to sin in the way that you see fit. That's my thing. Now, let's get to the other issue that you wanted to discuss. Yeah, so we're done with COVID, right? What's the other one you want to discuss?
Why are you trying so much this and Verde de Pisa?
I ain't gonna listen to Verde de Pisa. I thought I was trying to help her.
Help! Help!
Yeah.
You got a government, right? That raked off billions of dollars in debt.
You got a government that say home people can't be fear. Yeah, but they're talking about that. As a matter of fact, when they come, they talk about that. They got some people right. Falling from the ground. Want to be that against that? I mean, like Dennis said, they talk. Don't cut them.
Mm.
And I know I always say this. I have said this over and over again. I don't want no government to fail, because when the government fails, all of us fail. But it does not mean that you should come and do foolishness. And when you come, when people come and criticize it, you want to criticize them. You got government that criticize a lot of things and come and do worse than what they criticize. And I had a company ready and send that in. But I can tell you saying, I sorry for all the winners, because as long as God give me breath, any wrongdoing that is, in my opinion, is wrong, I am going to criticize. It can be my mother.
All right, no problem. Mr. P, somebody is telling me here that tell Mr. P that they banned bread, sugar, biscuits, potatoes, salt, coffee, and of course Viagra. That they could ban all of those things, and they're banning Viagra. I'm not sure why they think that you would be concerned about the banning of Viagra, but that is what is being said in the WhatsApp. I want to thank you so much for your comment. And I also want to thank the lady who wrote and said, in support of what you were saying, that I am obsessed with Verla de Pisa, as obsessed with her as Piers Morgan is obsessed with Meghan Markle. And yesterday's program was like a breath of fresh air. I'm happy that you enjoyed yesterday's program, and I am sure, ma'am, that you will enjoy tomorrow's program as well. And I do hope that you will continue to listen to Brass Tacks when the days come. But I can assure you that my interest in Verla de Pisa is entirely dissimilar to Piers Morgan's interest in Meghan Markle. Verla de Pisa and I have never been to a bar and had a casual drink. So I don't have to be concerned about the rejection in that regard. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. Good to hear you. I'm great, yeah.
Yeah, what I want to say is that I'm happy with the road that government is looking at now when they are giving contracts to the higher posts.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the paper yesterday.
I saw that too. Yeah.
I am happy with that move.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that should have done everything.
Yeah.
And that is a very good move.
Yeah. I support it as well, ma'am. It's consistent with contemporary human resource practices that say that at the higher levels, you need to put these people on contract. So there are very few posts in the world today where you are working on a 10-year system. Normally, you get a job and you're on contract. And when the contract ends, you renew. And that is the way that it is done these days. And I agree entirely. I look forward to the days that permanent secretaries, other senior officials in government, senior technical officers or whatnot, all of them go on contract and work in that way. So I'm with you 100%.
Because that I realized that they were dealing, just speaking about who's next in line, who have been more years than who, speaking about seniority, and doing nothing for the money.
Mm-hmm.
All they were looking at is that get that post and get some maturity, get a bigger pension, and that was all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy now that those that are waiting on bigger posts to get maturity and high pension, I'm very glad that this happened.
Yeah, okay. Mom, and I am there with you on that very much. And I think a lot of us feel that it will help us to have some level of efficiency within the public service, you know, where people don't believe that they got a job put down and that they have a promotion put down and all this kind of thing. So,
and another thing too, before you go, I think they need to look at wastage. The government cannot afford the kind of wastage that goes on. Because that you still have to look at certain people that you put into store rooms, people that you put to supervise, like supplies and things. Because I realize what is going on in some of those areas is a lot of like pilfering, and government is losing a lot of money in those areas also. So if they're going to start with contracts, look at the whole government department.
Yeah. Well, I mean, little by little. And I think part of the challenge is that you have to wait until a person retires and you fill the post to then start to create that kind of a regime. Unless you did what you did at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, where you move a whole essentially the whole hospital onto the you know, out of the public service into a different group, which is hard to do. So I think that the idea is little by little, you know, we get there. So that is something I support.
I think so.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. I have a couple of comments being offered regarding this whole question of fingerprints and eye information. And so one is saying, Peter, pigeons are fingerprinted and the eye information is given voluntarily when they visit other countries. I really don't understand what all the fuss is about. And someone else says, I'm glad for the new ID cards because when I studied overseas, they wouldn't take it because it was laminated and they believe it could have been tampered with. I had to show my driver's license instead. So I am all for a more efficient ID. And I must tell you, folks, that I wanted to comment on both of those experiences. If you have a newer phone, Apple or Samsung or so on, you often have the option to skip the password and use the iris information. And the iris is recognized. I believe that it is secure, but I don't know who, we don't know who that information is shared with. And we are not seemingly concerned about that because all of us willingly give that information up. And the same thing is when we travel to other countries. When you travel to the United States, you don't have a choice. If you apply for a visa, you have to give your fingerprint information. And certainly at the port of entry, you give your fingerprint information. If you don't want to, just don't go. And it's as simple as that. And then the other point in relation to it is that I too have had situations in which I have offered my ID card, my Barbados ID card as an identification, certainly in the United States, and have been laughed at. I remember in one instance, the person suggested that it was a forgery. And he said, buddy, I've been playing that game for many years. You really need to come better than that. It is a laughable document. It really is a laughable document, especially in the context of the United States. And I'm happy that it is being upgraded to something that looks more like an identification card and is certainly more secure than that which we currently have. Long overdue. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.